You mean like sort of on?
I guess I love
you. Imagine.
Because of you, I haven't lost your touch.
You mean like sort of on?
It's hard to believe the drama is over.
Because of you, I haven't lost your touch.
You mean like sort of on?
I guess I love you. It's hard to believe the drama is
you
over.
Lost your touch.
Well, that's all the scripted stuff.
Top journalism.
Hi, I'm Robert Valentine. You're listening to a very special edition of Pop Journalism. It's our big call-in show. Our guests are in the studio, ready to tackle your tough questions and comments about the state of journalism in Canada. You can call in at area code 416-595-1655. That's 416-595-1655. We'll take a quick musical break and run our irregular take on the news, which we call the Week in Review. Then it's time for your calls. Be sure to tune in this hour for some lively discussion and a mix of kickin' music to start your Sunday morning. We'll be right back.
In review.
Welcome back to Pop Journalism. So glad you're sticking with us this hour. The call-in show is coming right after the week in review. You can call us at 416-595-1655. But before we get to the week in review, I touch on the weather, and here's what you can expect today. It's going to be another hot, humid Sunday. It seems every Sunday I'm in here, it's hot and humid in Toronto. It never fails. There's a risk of thunderstorms, though. As high as going to be 31 degrees. The low is going to be 21. Hopefully it won't be as drearily foggy as it was yesterday. Did you notice there in the skyline there was this waxy white fog hanging over the sky? But that's a story for another edition of Pop Journalism. So let's get right to the week in review, and we'll be back with your calls.
Pop Journalism.
Pope John Paul II is in the city of Toronto. He's here as part of World Youth Day, the Catholic Church's festival of faith for the young. Hundreds of thousands of youth are in Toronto, setting the stage for an enormous Sunday morning mass by the Pope. Though the forecast calls for rain today, youth are camped out with tents and sleeping bags in Dunsby Park, where it's estimated a crowd of over 500,000 will converge. While the theme of World Youth Day is religious in nature, there's no doubt what attracted the huge crowds was the Pope. He's a religious superstar, and he has groupies.
It's going to be like an explosion in a while. When it comes, then this will just erupt.
John Paul II, we love you!
When the Pope made his speech, the crowds fell silent, and the Pope seemed to draw strength from the youthful energy around him.
You have come to Toronto from every continent to celebrate the World Youth Day.
World Youth Day seemed to have went by without a hitch, except outside the main events, where Catholics protesting the World Youth Day event handed out condoms to the visitors. The police stepped in at the request of the Catholic Church and removed the condom-toting Catholics off the property. Here's what a spokesperson for the World Youth Day had to say about that event.
There's a certain protocol of behavior that we have asked to take place, and we reserve the right, we have wonderful cooperation with the police of all the levels, that condoms are very inappropriate to hand out to young pilgrims.
There was little room for Catholic or World Youth Day dissent. One lawyer spoke to the CBC and said that the police officers in that incident stepped over the line.
They don't have a duty to enforce a moral code that the church likes. They have a duty to enforce the law, and this is beyond their duty and beyond their powers. I think it's an absolute abuse.
Whatever the case, there's little doubt that World Youth Day was a success for the Catholic Church. As the Pope Mobile rolls out of Toronto, many Catholics were left touched and starstruck by the pontiff's appearance.
John Paul II, we love you! John Paul II, we love you!
British parents are saying thank you to Harry Potter. The massively popular book series is responsible for an increase in parents reading to their children. According to a recent poll, 90% of British parents read to their children, and that's up 50% from just 2 years ago. The movie version of Potter and Lord of the Rings helped boost this literacy trend. Who says pop culture is a bad thing?
Pop journalism.
And finally, a quick update on NSYNC singer Lance Bass's attempt, or Bass, I don't know how to say his name, to venture into space. He has been confirmed by Russian authorities as the second civilian to venture into space. He's granted permission to accompany cosmonauts on the trip to the International Space Station. He must also gain approval from Canadian and European space agencies and NASA before taking his place on the launch. Regardless what happens, everyone here at Pop Journalism can't wait to have the NSYNC singer off the planet. Joining us are in-studio guests, Garine Chalakian, who is the host of Word of Mouth Thursday, Daniel Besharat, co-host during the summer of International Connection, and Greg Duffel, host of International Connection on CKLN. I'm your host, Robert Ballantyne. Let's start our live panel discussion.
What we're here for, of course, is to talk about the state of journalism in Canada. September 11th changed everything for journalism. Where were you on September 11th?
When I heard about it, it was on CBC Radio, and it was just on. I was doing something on the computer. I was preparing some document, and I heard about it, and I ran over to the TV, and I turned it on. And of course, every channel that didn't have real resources to put on, you know, real news, I guess, they were tuned into CNN. I watched it live. I think this is probably one of the longest, if I can remember in my lifetime, one of the longest covered live media events. This went on and on and on. It was always live. It was always deemed as being a live event. And there was Aaron Brown on the top of this, I guess on top of the CNN Center in New York, watching the first building on fire and then watching, of course, the second plane come in. First, of course, we thought of Hollywood because we've been so programmed into the Hollywood myth that we think it's all an illusion, a very large, elaborate special effect. And that's, of course, the first thing that runs through our mind. And then, of course, we engage in a very political thinking process, as Greg also alluded to, in terms of what happened here, planned attack, who did it, who carried it out. What are the ramifications? What will, you know, the world be like in 6 months down the line? So that was that's where I was, and the first kind of thoughts that came to my mind when September 11th occurred.
When September 11th happened, I got my news sources from, actually, I didn't watch television at all. I watched it on the internet and on the newspapers. Where did you get your information on the day and maybe a little after?
Yeah, for me it was definitely through television because it was a broadcast television journalism course that I was taking. So obviously there was TVs everywhere, and it was mostly by on television. And it was really interesting because within just a couple of hours of the attack, the Toronto Star had issued the special, you know, front page report all over the school as well, of course, everywhere. And I thought that was interesting as well.
Greg.
Well, I suppose the first thing that I started to do was record material on videotape, and with an eye to, first of all, just recording it and documenting what was going on at the time. And then I got a call from the station, CKLN, from the news director, saying, do you want to come in later on in the day, because we're going to go live to air at early, at I think they went at 6 o'clock in the evening, with a show for at least a couple of hours. Where they tried to assemble as much information as we knew at that time. And there was a lot of conflicting information. In fact, that day there was a rumor that there was an attack immediately on Afghanistan, which there was a rocket attack in Kabul, which has always been mysterious. But so I was preparing clips almost the whole afternoon to bring in to play on the air for that particular program.
So your sources for media were mainly television then?
Yes.
Okay. Daniel? Yeah.
I guess in this particular event, there are many types of environments that humans go through. And, of course, one of them is the acoustic environment where we listen to things. September 11th was a very kind of, it was in the realm of the visual environment. It was very visually oriented. You had to see it to believe it, really. If you were told that planes crashed into the World Trade Center and that they, you know, blew up and then these buildings began to collapse, you almost wouldn't believe them. Even the still photographs, you almost wouldn't believe and take for face value. You'd almost have to be watching the actual frame by frames as they slowly progress, so you'd actually see the entire animation. And this is why television, I guess, was the number one source for most people. Radio was used and was employed a lot, but again, you miss that visual cue, because in today's world where everything is videotaped by cameras and people have video recorders ready to tape anything on the fly, yes, for me too, it was a very TV-related source rather than radio. And unlike
Garinet.
For me, the web just shut down. I attempted to go to very common sources like CNN or other news sources to find information for live events, and it was all clogged. Websites were completely shut down to the point where they only had one image of the World Trade Center building with a plane colliding, saying that World Trade Center is attacked, and that was it, so that they would relieve congestion to their websites. So I found the World Wide Web almost completely unusable at that particular time.
We'll start with you, Greg. What did you, on television you watched, how did they do?
Well, I was amazed how quickly CNN was able to bring in Henry Kissinger. It was filled with military analysts and an almost immediate preparation for war. That's what CNN was getting everybody ready to deal with right off the bat. And, of course, I think there was a lot of speculation as about how many people were going to die in this attack. And thankfully, I suppose, well, of course, the death toll was a lot lower than they originally started to talk about. Originally, they were saying that there were up to 50,000 people might die because of the amount of traffic that went through those two buildings. So other than that, I just remember an endless stream of military analysts.
Hey, Garnet, did it change you as a journalist, September 11th?
Yes, in the sense that it forced me to look at issues or to face up to issues that I was still, I guess, uncomfortable talking about, because as a young journalist, you know, in school, you're often taught about objectivity and about the importance of not having, you can have opinions, but you have to report things, quote-unquote, objectively. So what September 11th did for me was force me to face these issues about U.S. foreign policy and things like that a lot more quickly than I was comfortable with, I should say.
I guess the reason why we bring up September 11th is because it plays such a big role in today's media and also our impressions of it lately. We're sort of heading off some of the major competition that's going to be, celebrating, I don't know if that's the appropriate word, the September 11th, one-year anniversary come September 11th. And they're planning on doing a full day's worth of broadcasting live with a few interruptions. What do you think of that, Daniel? Is it necessary? Is it grandstanding for the media part?
No, I think necessity is not something that plays a role here. I think that when you asked, you know, how do you view the job of the media during the time of September 11th? I think it has done the same thing it has always done. I think there has been no change. The media is set up as political manager. As a political manager of a wide group of individuals, it's a system and a resource set up to manipulate individuals into the way that they think. Specifically, using big words, it's a regimentation of the minds, and the media has been so perfectly set up for many, many decades now to regiment individuals into a particular way and mode of thinking. And as soon as September 11th happened, the media proved itself. If there's one thing that September 11th showed us, is that the media is perfectly set up to not only, I'll use the word for the first time, propagandize, but to properly, jingoistically create a hysteria in a large population of the world, namely within the United States. For 72 hours, as Greg mentioned, they were able to pull out, or actually within the first 12 hours, they were able to pull out Henry Kissinger. Here's a man whose entire life has been to create hysteria in the minds of the public within Americans, to get them to the point where they're willing to go and invade countries and, you know, demolish entire civilizations. That is exactly what the media has been set up to do, and that's exactly what it proved itself beyond a reasonable doubt, even to the point of exaggeration, where they had, you know, Kissinger and they had every William Cohen. They had absolutely every apologist for pro-military, pro-U.S. agenda, people who are political managers, streaming themselves one after another on CNN. I think the job and the role of the media simply was exaggerated during September 11th. I don't think it changed. I think it was simply exaggerated.
They had Henry Kissinger on before I could put a video cassette in.
That man is on their
Rolodex.
Yeah.
Okay.
Speed
guys.
Dial.
We're going to take a musical break right now. Remember, you can call in live 416-595-1655. Here's a little Nightmares on Wax for you this morning.
Realizing
And welcome back to Pop Journalism. We're back here talking about the state of journalism in Canada. And Greg Duffel was dancing tonight.
That's right. It's Robert's dance party here.
You have to keep people awake in the mornings, right?
I know. I'm not considerate like that.
Are we getting too serious for people at this time of the morning?
Well, we should head back to a little bit of September 11th. We're going to close the topic pretty soon, but Yarene had a few words to say about it.
Yeah, just before the musical break, I wanted to actually add to what Daniel was saying about political management of the news. I agree with that, but I also want to add to that the business management of the news. And I think that, yes, journalism did get the chance to prove itself, but in the sense also of the fact that I think that, you know, journalism increasingly sells conflict. It sells action. That's the kind of thing that sells. And I think that the fact that increasingly we're seeing the conglomeration of, you know, things like Bell Globe Media taking over more and more of the news, I think that that's probably one of the problems. And basically, it got to have a field day, the journalism industry, in terms of selling conflict. Obviously, it's inevitable with cases as catastrophic as that day, but I think at the same time, it's I think we should maybe talk a little bit about the fact that journalism increasingly sells action and conflict. It doesn't sell solutions. I mean, we saw very, very little talk of the underlying fundamental issues about this attack. So I thought that was interesting.
What did that sound?
Yeah,
I was distracted the whole time I was talking.
I think it's you, Daniel.
What? Is it this thing?
Yes.
This thing?
Thank you for irritating all of our listeners.
I didn't touch it. You're staring at it. I didn't touch it.
Are you writing, perhaps?
No.
Okay, let's wait for that little
ambient.
Okay, it's gone now.
I want to get back to business management.
Okay, well,
because I don't totally disagree, but what was my point going to be? Oh yes, and you talk about the selling conflict. We have to be very, very specific when we deal with media analysis and when we look at selling conflict. The media doesn't sell. Well, I would argue that the media doesn't sell anything. It rather creates something. And what it does is it creates an audience. The product of the media is not newspapers or the CNN broadcast. They would love to give you the news for free. They have no problems with that. I mean, you can go on the World Wide Web and you can get it all for free. What they do is they create you. And you are the media's product. I don't know what that sounded like. You are the media's product. So it's not a matter of selling you conflict, it's you are their product to further go out and promote conflict. They create in you the want and the understanding that conflict is a means to an end, whether it be political or business related or even personal within your own life, that the media teaches individuals not only how to feel and think about themselves, but how to interrelate with other people. And that's what's very important, that the business management the business management begins with the Again, I have to go back to history, but begins with the financial oligarchy that began, you know, way back when you had large conglomerate businesses that were in the business of creating and manipulating people's minds to create masses of individuals that would properly follow what they have to say to keep them, you know, level, to keep them straight. I mean, democracy is founded on this entire principle to keep people more or less sedated, right? Give them Hollywood, give them entertainment, but when it comes to the real stuff like September 11th, No, they can't participate there. Only we're their self-appointed betters. We're the smart and wise men. We will do what we think is best in their minds, mm-hmm. Right? This is the basis of Leninism, which is why I disagree with the Duffel. But we can get into the whole political ramifications of what self-appointed better and people like that are. But that's why I don't necessarily see it in terms of business management to sell conflict, but to create conflict within the minds of people. And that's what's, I think, more kind of mm-hmm. extract the point.
No, I see what you're saying.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The thing that struck me about what happened on September 11th and how it related to CNN was that CNN had undergone a complete revamping of their entire style of broadcasting.
Okay, I'll just turn off your mic. go for it, Greg.
They had revamped the whole CNN, anchors on down, and this had almost been completely, you know, accomplished at the time that September 11th occurred. Coincidence? Don't know.
Greta Van Susteren actually comments about that.
Really?
Yeah. Greta Van Susteren was the law...
analyst. What's her
exact position? Law analyst, correct.
Right.
Yeah. She had the...
And
the
Scientologist.
Is she a Scientologist?
Oh, yes.
God damn. sorry. She had the eye job to make her appearance, I guess. She thought that a visual appearance on her face would improve her, journalistic demeanor. Anyway, she left CNN, and she made a lot of comments against CNN and how they managed the entire business. She thought that they were making it into a poorer and poorer station by firing a lot of people and, you know, overhauling the entire station. Speaking of recent eye jobs, it's also Connie Chung's also back on. She's for the first time, I guess, on CNN.
Isn't that show awful? Have
yes.
you watched
yes.
it?
Yes.
Oh, is it
it's
horrible?
Incredible.
Oh.
But why is it bad? Because it's created to...
she doesn't prepare.
She
doesn't seem to have any background at all. She's just talking to fill...
It's a diversion.
Yeah, really.
It's a media diversion.
Surprisingly awkward, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Well, she seems kind of halfway between embarrassed and nervous to be
it'd
there.
Be, I mean, I kind of identify with it because I figure it'd be like what it would look like if I were doing the show.
I think we could do a better job.
You think so? Yeah, I think maybe. Yeah.
But it's interesting you bring up the topic of business management because there's
that
also...
Was Garina. That was her point.
Right. Thank you, Garina. Thank you, Dan. Yeah, because the media is often accused of having a liberal bias. And, of course, we don't have a lot of that in Canada, especially with the National Post is very right-wing. What do you think about the newspapers as political entities? Where did some of the newspapers stand? We'll start, Garnet.
Well, I'm always surprised because even the most right-wing paper can sometimes write a very moderate or left-wing article sometimes. So sometimes I am a little bit surprised. But I think in general I would consider like the Toronto Star left, Globe and Mail moderate to center, to left, to right, but center, I guess. And I would consider National Post, of course, right, yeah.
Dan?
Oh, no. Okay. Liberal bias and political entities. Again,
doesn't relate to Leninism, eh?
No, it doesn't.
Okay,
well, I don't see it that way.
Yeah.
I don't. When I look, when we examine media structure, I don't think we should look at it and say, well, this particular paper is left wing bias, or this particular is right wing bias. I mean, that's all fine for a very, I would argue again, very diversionary type of analysis of the media. What's important is to look at how people in the media got to where they were and how the socialization of journalists got to the point where they are now in the media or that they are now reporting for whatever paper because they were selected, because they have something that they say, which is very much pro, I guess, the status quo of the corporation, the way that the corporate elite, this elite media, this agenda-setting media, runs itself. There is no manner of really... I mean, you can go again, as I said, on a very... low level of analysis, saying, "Well, this is left, this is right," but the entire media is still the same. The media is, it's owned by a large number of few corporations, and their primary concern is to control the minds of people. I guess I'm harping on.
I have to just jump right in. Sorry to cut you off, but I just have to say, I don't think it's definitely to control the minds of people. I think a corporation exists for one purpose only, and that's to accumulate assets.
Right.
And I see what you're saying and I agree, but I think it's definitely, I mean, if you take the example of John Cassidy, I mean, he sold Rothman's cigarettes
mm-hmm.
before he's the head of CTV News. So it's not always a political interest that these corporations have. It's usually just the interest of the nature of being a corporation
right.
and wanting to accumulate assets.
And how do they, through attempting to accumulate assets, most of the time they commit a lot of crimes to do so. A lot of corporations are tyrannies. These are tyranny-type organizations that engage in a lot of malicious activity. How do you maintain tyrannical organizations in a liberal, I guess, society? How do they maintain themselves? Well, the way that they do this is they engage in propaganda, they engage in PR, and they engage in this U.S. created public relations battle to maintain some level of face, to implant in the people's minds that if they vote, they're engaging in some level of democracy. They create constitutions that somehow believe that they're engaging in some level of political discourse, where they really aren't. Their real voice is being stifled because they believe in this pseudo-intellectual media, and then, but really behind the scenes, all their decisions are being made by only a few group, you know, hand-selected group of people. So when I say control of minds, I literally mean this few group, this particular few that believe that they are somehow enlightened and above the rest of the masses has to somehow control that power, and they believe they have the right to control that power through propaganda in the media. So it's not a matter of it is a matter of almost total mind control on the propaganda front.
It's funny that you bring up the owners. There's a lot of journalists who are working in the field who don't feel that they're being controlled by the owners. They're out there. Of course, they are censored once in a while, but they're generally out there bringing up issues on their own and taking the lead. Greg, what do you think about that? Do you think the owners are hovering over the journalists' desks and controlling what they say in the paper?
My impression would be that the journalists often come from a certain class of people, and that they are prone to be in the same mindset as their employers to a great extent, and that it doesn't really require that much controlling. There might be a story here or there that they come across that it might start deviating from the company line. And I think that an editor will, if they have a certain political viewpoint and feel that their job depends upon portraying that, then they'll do it. So I don't think it takes much from the people that I see, let's say on the CBC or on CNN, I don't think it would take much to manipulate these people. I don't think they need to be manipulated at all. I think that they're just coming forth with the kind of values that they're expected to have. With regard to the right-left balance and that the media is viewed as being left-wing in the United States and in Canada, I think this is just absolutely ridiculous, and the show Counterspin certainly has proven this. Not the CBC show, but the one that is run on Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting we run on the International Connection. They've outlined how that this whole concept of left-wing bias in the media is just ridiculous. And certainly watching the CBC here in Canada, although I'd say we get a little bit more diversity here, still one can see constant examples of a status quo portrayal of life and politics.
And we're bringing up the issue of business ownership. When we come back, we'll talk about ownership in Canada and how 90% of our media is controlled by 7 corporations. Be right back.
I've been holding out so long. I've been sleeping all alone. Lord, I miss you. I've been hanging on the phone. I've been slipping all alone. I won't kiss you.
Yeah, you've been struck off a singing after dark, people think I'm crazy. Stuffing on my feet, shuffling through the street, asking people, what's the matter with you, boy? Sometimes I wanna say, to myself.
Bit of Rolling Stones, that's a Dr. Dre remix from Austin Powers, Gold Member. And we're back here talking about the state of journalism in Canada. Remember, we're taking your calls, although we got a little preoccupied, at 416-595-1655. And we were just talking about media ownership, and Dan had a few words to say before we headed into that.
Just to complete, what Greg was talking about was very much true, that the people that work in the media internalize the framework of belief. I mean, here we have a power structure in society that sets up from kindergarten. I don't know.
Yeah, it's you, Dan.
There
we
go.
It's going to keep going. It sets up a framework of socialization. You don't go to Harvard to learn content. You go to Harvard to learn how to behave in terms of manners and how to think about things. That's what's very, very key. And you have this normalization that takes place. So when you ask a reporter, you say, well, you're a biased individual. How dare you report like that? You're a horrible, horrible journalist. They rightly say, well, I'm not. People don't come here and tell me what to write. Of course they don't, because they themselves have been through the socialization process. They themselves already know what to think, or else they wouldn't be in that particular position. So when you approach someone like one of the main reporters, like Peter Mansbridge wouldn't be Peter Mansbridge unless he had already been socialized. If Peter Mansbridge did have altering views, and I just have one example, and this is probably a very common example, it's Gary Webb of the San Jose Mercury News. He ran an entire series on the CIA crack epidemic. He discussed the links between the CIA and the crack epidemic all throughout the United States. Man is fired. Why? Because he has dissenting views and he's not copying or following what the New York Times and the CBS tells him to say. So now that we...
Yeah, no, I just actually, I'm very enthusiastic about what you're saying there, because I just want to add to it, is the fact that often we're taught in journalism schools about objectivity and the importance of looking at both sides and all these things, but really, like, the mainstream news does nothing but reflect the status quo and ensure that the status quo is always represented, and it's ironic because they pretend that that's being objective, but if you were really being objective, you would probably have a different opinion. I think that's what's really interesting. They always show, you know, the status quo is represented, and then they call that being objective, and I think that's wrong. But of course, objectivity is there for a reason. They try to make it look like that, and I think most people can't see it unless you scratch the surface. But objectivity does nothing but ensure that you don't offend advertisers of that network or that newspaper by being objective, obviously, or you know you don't offend anyone. So I think that's a good point to raise, too.
I think there can't be a better example of the kind of journalism that Gerne is talking about than what we're currently sitting through in terms of the papal visit to Toronto, which we're going to be talking about later on the other show. But the thing that I notice is that Peter Mansbridge is there, and they're selling a DVD of it, and you don't find them bringing in an atheist. They're not that balanced. They're not going to have an atheist sitting there and complaining constantly about the kind of excess in reporting or the excess in or the cult of personality. But if I remember that there was some celebration happening in Beijing, China, and the CBC was reporting on it live, and it was a massive celebration in China, and who do they have there? The Globe and Mail's Jan Wong, who's a fervent anti-communist, complaining constantly about the Chinese government. But we don't see the same type of reporting going on during the papal visit with people who are anti-Pope or anti-Vatican.
But we're just back on track here about, there was a lot of controversy, Dan brought this up, about when you reflect dissenting views from the paper's ownership, it's dangerous for an individual journalist.
Right.
And we've seen that happen here in Canada in a big way with the Canada's global media chain in a very public way. And quit hitting your microphone stand, Daniel. It's irritating. Okay, but Canada's Global, of course, is owned by the Asper family, which has ties to the Liberal government. And a number of columnists and writers have dissented and wrote anti-articles asking for the Prime Minister to step down or complaining about the control of media by the Asper family.
Or more probably politically and worldwide, the current Middle East situation.
Right, right. They're biased. They're pro-Israel biased.
Right.
Garanay, let's step into you, this with you. What do you think about it as a journalist to have this massive newspaper chain controlling what people say, in a sense?
I think it's definitely, first of all, I think as a young journalist, I was disappointed with the fact that not enough journalists across the nation stood up against this kind of, tyranny, I guess. It's wrong that I think it was Lawrence Martin who was talking about how he was likening the situation of the Palestinians to the situation of the natives, and his article was pulled. I think as a journalist, if you really care about the principles of journalism, that you know, without these other influences of business, but if you really care about informing society truly so that we can make truly democratic decisions, the fact that every journalist didn't stand up against this blows me away. I think if, for instance, if this happened in France, everybody in the streets would be up in the streets, and I guess they would be protesting. They call that journaliste engagé. And that brings me to my point about, I think, the fact that journalists are increasingly feeling disconnected from their role as citizen, you know, as an active member of society. We're increasingly being disconnected from our role as a citizen, and I think that's definitely wrong. Yeah.
Well, it's funny too that Daniel, you have problems?
No problem.
You're hitting your microphone.
Journalist engagé. Messier, I believe Paul Messier was the owner of Vivendi, and Vivendi in France, you're talking about France, was the owner of Canal Plus. And of course, as we all know, Vivendi, at one point, he was the main orchestrator behind the joining with Universal, and now, of course, the entire business is falling apart, and Messier was fired. Messier is a perfect example of when the media does, or when the media gets really, really irritated, pissed off, I guess, is the operative word, where the entire crew and cast of the entire Canal Plus news stations all across France went on collective strike, and they all took over the cameras in the studios, and they constantly broadcasted pro-worker media all over France on the Canal Plus stations and various media outlets all across France. So that's an example, I guess, of...
And it's a really good one, too. I really like that one.
If you do say so yourself. Yeah. In Canada's global situation, journalists have been standing up. The Canadian Association of Journalists have been sending tons of anti-Canada's global stuff. And even our own Ryerson professor, which me and Garanay used to go there, and I go there, issued out a statement against concentration of media in Canada. And there's also been many voices standing up for that, and even subscribers have taken to dropping their subscriptions, which is very interesting. What do you think about, Greg, go to you, about the more journalists being more active in fighting this censorship?
Well, I don't think they're going to be, because they're paid to go there and keep working. They're not going to be paid to revolt. And I think in Canada, as Garanay sort of alluded to, this just is not in our culture to do this. When we have people dying in Afghanistan with U.S. bombs, Canadians don't get out in the streets and get miserable about it.
The Canadian soldiers.
Yeah. There's not this feeling of outrage that Canadians tend to want to express, and I think that this extends into the media, certainly.
And just as a last topic here, we're running to the end of the show. How do you think here at CKLN, we are different from everyone else so that we can complain here on the show about everyone else. Are we different than mainstream media, the so-called objective mainstream media? Anyone can jump in here.
I'll jump in. Okay. I think that, first of all, the fact that it's a community-based station makes a very big difference. Of course, CBC is a public broadcaster, but it has ties to the CRTC, who are each politically appointed, of course. So, you know, there's issues there already fundamentally with that structure. Here at CKLN or other community stations, I think that it's a big advantage, the fact that we are directly accountable to our listeners and not to the owners of the station, for instance. The listeners are the owners. It's like during the penny press revolution, that was the first time, I guess, that newspapers were owned by advertisers and that journalists became accountable and editors became accountable to the advertiser rather than to the buyers of the paper. So I think that the fact that the structure here is different changes everything, and it makes it for a lot more real, down-to-earth coverage.
So then why aren't we number one, Greg?
Well, I would say, why aren't we number one? We're not number one because...
Actually, we were voted... Best campus radio station. Okay,
that's true. Well, before I get to that point, maybe I'll just talk about, you asked what the difference is between the mainstream media and what we're doing. Obviously, most of us are not being paid to be here and be on the radio, and that makes a certain amount of difference. And probably a lot of us wouldn't be on the air if it were not for CKLN. We would not be able to have the ability to speak to however many people we are speaking to, let's say right now, which is probably not that many, but we wouldn't have that opportunity whatsoever. So this is, at least in my case, I certainly have been able to come here out of nowhere, really, as a listener of all things, and come and broadcast here at CKLN. Now, you ask an interesting question, and is it, are we different? And in some ways, I would say that we are not. I would say that in a lot of ways, there is the same kind of doctrinaire politics going on here, lockstep thinking that is expected to happen. Because there is a certain, I think a lot of that is because of an anti-movement. We look at the other side and we go, we can't be like them. So, but then again, that isn't always the right way to go. And also from a political point of view, there are certain things that cannot be said here. And the other thing is, that brings me to the point of ownership, really, who owns this? The CRTC technically owns this. And they own all the stations. And they have control over what we say and what we're allowed to say and what we're not allowed to say. So in some respects, I think there is a comparison between what we do and what they do, because we're working in antithesis to them, and often we start getting the same attributes as our competitors, as you might say. As far as why aren't we number one, we're down on the bottom end of the dial, we're hard to get, the signal is bad, and people just evidently don't go down there, and I guess that's why there are certain places on the FM dial that are more advantageous for broadcasters to have.
Yeah, we are at the bottom of 88.1.
Right.
Dan, why aren't we number one?
Well, we're not number one for a few reasons, and it begins with the differences. Are we different? And the first big difference, and that there is a difference, is the access to resources. We are like a lot of other newspapers within the United States that have no access to large funds and resources to engage in investigative journalism in ideas that we would rather investigate compared to what we're told to investigate. How are we told to investigate things? Well, the CBS and the New York Times creates what we report on. If you read CNN, you are reading, by virtue of the fact that you're reading CNN, you are reading what you're told to care about. When you read CNN, you're told what to care about. And the fact that most people here at this station do not do their own investigative journalism, and that they do read major
major journalistic outlets that they are, in essence, doing what they're told to do. They're doing what the agenda-setting media is telling them to do. They simply repeat on this exact station. So again, the socialization is exactly the same. The internal structure, the institutional structure, the doctrinal system, which Greg alluded to, is exactly the same. So we are not different in terms of the content, really, because we're simply re-echoing what we see out there.
Or we're going against what they're saying. Right, we read something, go, that's a lot of crap. Let's just, that can't be right.
Yes, but the fact that we're paying attention and we're focusing on the issue is that they choose what we talk about.
That's true.
It's the choice of what you talk about and when you talk about it, or I mean, how you talk about it is not really always as important as to what you talk about. Are you discussing the Middle East? Are you discussing U.S. interests? Are you discussing Afghanistan? Are you discussing September 11th? Are you discussing what happens in Kananaskis? If the media cares about these things, and if the agenda-setting media cares about these things, everyone reads about it, and the people that work at the station, if they are within the socialization factor, if they have, if those are their primary outlets, they have been socialized. As to why are we not number one, because the same doctrinal system exists elsewhere, therefore our media product is the same. Therefore, they can get maybe a better media product somewhere else where they have better resources.
Also, I'd say, just saying about the number one situation, is also we're not formatted. We're not just a news station. We're not just a pop station. And that seems to be the order of the day now, where everything is formatted.
Right.
So what do we do to break this socialization? This is a big one-minute answer question. How do we break free of all this mainstream trappings and make CKLN our own, or divert these voices that we keep hearing and constantly from CNN and New York Times, Washington Post?
We realize that our self-appointed betters are not betters. We realize that, I mean, I guess I'm now telling an anarchist line, which is, I guess, the true anarchist line, is that that people should not represent us, that we are our only true representatives in this world, and that burdening oligarchies, basically financial ones, that wish to publicly relate to us how we think about ourselves and each other, we will not accept, and therefore we will, I guess, engage in a level of media ecology to not listen to them, to not pay attention, really, to what they're saying, or if we do, find something else. And that's, I guess, the best way how to engage in the media, is to find your own news, to find what you care about, and to actively pursue what you care about. Because I truly believe that what people care about is not what the media cares about. And what we're told by the agenda-setting media, that's not what most people care about.
Greg?
I think that we're doing, at CKLN, I think we're doing about the best job that we could be reasonably expected to do under the circumstances. There's a certain amount of diversity going on here that's important. How is it going to be broken in the mainstream? I don't think that will happen until the capitalist structures start breaking down. And interestingly, with CNN, well, Danny's shaking his head, but well, I think there'll be disruption in that, shall we say. Whether they'll break down is another thing. But the thing that I noticed recently was, CNN, Time Warner is in big trouble economically. And one wonders about the health of CNN and their ability to continue going in the manner that they have been. So, but I think things will just carry on more or less the way they have been. And I don't see any major changes occurring in the future.
And Yarene, you have the last word.
Oh, I feel so privileged.
How do we break this mainstream media controlling the agenda?
I think I have to really agree with Daniel, actually. I think that definitely, and Greg, in terms of the fact of, you know, having an anti-movement and, we react to the mainstream news, we do need to definitely break free from this. I don't like to call it agenda setting. I don't know how much I know about that, but I do think that the news definitely is about conflict. It's about bad news, and all it does is, I think, personally demoralize you and decrease the quality of your own life. I think it's important to pursue things that really do interest you, and that's by pursuing your own your own research, and to engage in personal endeavors of research and things that matter to you. That I just completely agree. I think that's right on the dot right there.
And that's all for Pop Journalism. Thanks everyone for joining us in the studio here. Dan,
thank
Greg,
you.
Garanay, I appreciate you being up here early in the morning.